spend some time with you talking about the new Lutheran Church, which I guess we can begin to refer to by its proposed name, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. What I'd like to do this afternoon with you is to listen to you a bit in terms of your both fears, if you have any, or hopes, if you have any, about this new church. So while I'm saying a few words, just so we all start about the same place, start thinking about that, and then we'll take some time in a few moments to do that. I don't know how much background any of you have in terms of information, so I'm going to give you a very brief outline about what's been happening to bring us to this point in our three church bodies, the American Lutheran Church, the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches, and the Lutheran Church in America. In 1982, the three church bodies I just mentioned met simultaneously at three different locations. And at their conventions in September of 82, voted to begin a process to become one Lutheran church. It was a very emotional moment. If any of you were at one of those three conventions, you will know what I experienced too, is that it was a very electrifying moment as the three church bodies who were meeting in convention announced their votes to each other via telephone lines and communication system. And as each vote was announced, the cheers of that particular convention were joined by the cheers of two other conventions. So it was a very special moment. As a part of that decision, a commission was elected and selected of 70 persons, which would represent the three church bodies as in a way of planning for this new church. It was never done this way before. This is the first time. The history of church mergers in the past has been that of church leaders, and that means clergy, white male clergy, meeting and working out the process and then announcing it to the people of the church. Well, this time, the proposal was that a commission of people large enough to be representative, a commission that would be comprised of more lay than clergy, and a commission that would include people of color, people whose primary language is other than English, would be included in a process. And that was done. And since 1982, in the last 4 years, that commission of 70 persons has met 9 times. And has produced 7 reports to the churches. The latest, which is really outdated because the next commission, the final commission meeting, will be in Seattle later this month. The last meeting, which was held on February 19th, produced this progress report number 7. And I'll put my first plug in for the bookstore. These are available in the bookstore. It's meant to be an understandable, and I think it's mostly that, understandable report to the churches about where the progress has been. These are available for the large sum of 10 cents. So if you can part with a dime, you've got yourself report number 7. And also, at that same meeting, the commission approved the plan of merger and the proposed constitution, bylaws, and resolutions for the new church. This is not available in the bookstore, but if any of you are interested in reading constitutions and bylaws, please let me know and I'll let you share my copy. Okay, so that's what has happened to this point. As you probably know, maybe you don't, but as you probably know, since that last meeting, in February, there has been a considerable amount of discussion, of criticism and of controversy about where we are now that we are poised on the brink of deciding about whether we're going to have this new church. In August of this year, once again, the three churches will meet simultaneously. The American Lutheran Church is meeting in Minneapolis. The Lutheran Church in America is meeting in Milwaukee, which is one of the interesting ironies of all this. And the AELC is meeting in Chicago. And at those conventions, again, there will be simultaneous discussion and action taken upon the Constitution and bylaws, and finally the vote on whether to form this new church. So we are literally just a short time away, a little over 2 months away from the decision. And because of the controversy, because of the concerns that have been expressed by the Lutheran Church in America bishops and church council, the response of the American Lutheran Church Council, and the various resolutions that have come out of ALC and LCA and AELC district and synod conventions this summer, I thought it would be good for you and I together to share where we are. And what are the issues? You know, what's new about the church and what's old? And does anybody really care? And that's why I put the title in. Will the new church happen? And I've got some thoughts about that. But I think even more importantly, does anybody care? Do you care? Does the world care? People are not particularly excited about church mergers. You know, we're not, if this were a Lutheran church merging with the Presbyterian church or Roman Catholic, that would be news. But Lutherans getting together with Lutherans is not terribly exciting to anybody but Lutherans, and not even all those. So what I'd like you to do now is to take a few moments and see if you can identify three hopes and three fears about this new Lutheran church. What you know about it, what you've heard about it, whatever. Yes?
I was wondering, in 82 when this started, was that a groundswell of unity seeking from congregations, or was it the district offices, national offices? Where did the original idea come from?
The original impetus for this particular event came out of a 1980 convention of the AELC. And in 1980, the AELC issued what was named a call to Lutheran union. It was extended to all the Lutheran church bodies in the U.S. And in the time between 80 and 82, all of the district and synods of the ALC and LCA discussed that proposed call to Lutheran union in preparation for the national bodies. And at those national bodies, the votes were quite overwhelming, surprisingly so, in fact. No one had anticipated that the votes would be as largely lopsided as they were. I forget the exact percentage. Somebody may help with this. The AELC was 100%. I think the LCA was 96% and ALC 91. I may be wrong on that exact figure, but it was a very sizable, very overwhelming majority. Elmer?
Isn't it true that both the ALC and the LCA had, if not standing committees, standing assignments to somebody to gather and to work on this, but projected for later dates?
Yes. The ALC and LCA are working, have been working on this for some time. And the way they were going at it was to deal with the considerable number of polity differences that existed. And it looked as though it was going to go into the 21st century the way the progress was being made. And it was because of that the initial call was issued. Let's first of all say we want to be one church, and then let's work at it and give ourselves a timetable. And also, I should have mentioned too, in 82 at those conventions, a timetable was established. They said, let's not give ourselves forever. Let's say that we have 6 years, and that by January 1, 1988, we will be a new church. And that is still the proposed timetable. Any other questions before we do our hopes and fears? Would you be willing to do that? Take a few minutes now and try and jot down some things. I'd like to put them up here so we can see where we are as a group in terms of our expectations. Okay? Barbara, you can cut the tape now and we'll take 5 minutes. This is being taped, as you probably all know.
Well, let's start with hopes. How about that? Barbara, you can start the tape now, I guess, if you want. I'd like to hear your hopes. Tell me some things that you've got down here. What are your hopes about the new church?
Stronger impact of mission.
Okay.
Presumably because you're larger, you're stronger, more intent on mission.
Stronger in mission.
Outreach and mission when I'm already there.
Okay. Outreach to minorities. Anyone else? Okay. We'll have to talk about
Admin, maybe that's important.
Yeah. Okay. Russ. What's an example of something like that? What would you use as an example? Well, you think about it. Give an example. Okay. Less emphasis on peripherals, nothing on, more on the whatever the basic.
I think about the doctrine.
Okay. Hopes. Yes?
Do away with bureaucratic duplication.
Okay. Avoid duplication. I assume you mean of whatever the church is doing, right?
Got three headquarters now, three
sets of everything.
Commissions for mission.
Okay. How about effort? Avoid duplication of effort. That kind of covers. Okay, right. And that was one of the original. Okay. Okay.
I have one hope that from the deal in our history in America, the enhancement of the dignity of the pastoral office. So the pastor is not an image maker to be a popular figure, but the method of the Word of God. Romans 10.
Okay, so to...
The LC has had it, we haven't had it.
All right. What word do you use, Carol?
Pastoral office as constituent in the congregational...
I think the word is constitutive of the church.
Yeah,
something
that's
like
right.
That.
That's the word.
Yeah, okay.
From the onset, there was a pro statement that ran throughout, by being bigger, we will be heard more by other denominations, recognized more by government. That
Okay. Is that one of your hopes?
Yeah.
Okay. To be, what would you say? To be have your duty church or a what?
More influential. Okay.
All right. Visibility, and I've heard visibility and influence. United with each other, you mean?
I'm thinking locally that way, too.
Ah, okay. Let's put that down. Local unity. Among congregations.
Between congregations.
Yes.
Is that the intent?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Very good point.
That's the last thing that comes. We still haven't got it from 1917.
Yeah.
Good point. Right?
No, we haven't.
Yeah. Anything else?
More
outreach in the community instead of sending it all to our mission.
Okay, let's put mission both local and international then. How's that? Because I'm hearing both of that.
One of my hopes is that there'll be more inclusiveness because we're interested in dealing with things like quotas and participation. So hopefully that will be settled in more evidence.
Inclusive.
Yes, along with that, one of my hopes is that we become less of the European church and more of the North American church.
That's a very good point, and it might even show up in the liturgy. If it hasn't yet.
Is it all in the mood?
Then will I teach transgressors thy ways and sinners shall be converted unto thee? It would be naturally added to that little section in the offertory. We were in America. Can't say it in Europe. They're all saved. Everybody's baptized.
Yes.
That's our attitude.
Maybe a stronger political voice in the sense of consistency, be together. It's maybe great setup.
Yeah, I think with the influence, the political kind of impact on society. And
okay.
We certainly all hope so, don't we?
Put it down because it seems to be getting lost here somewhere along the line.
Christ-centered. Okay. Since I'm running out of room on the board, let's stop this tech column and look at our fears.
Well, there won't just be another big organization. We knew in 1960 we'd lose the tribe and we hoped to discover the church. We just got another organization. So, and we're hoping this time we might discover the church.
Not just a big organization. It's going to be bigger. I didn't mention before, this new church would include 11,100 congregations and 5,340,000 members. Okay, other fears.
That the conflicts that are now presenting will further divide folks.
You mean theological
yeah.
conflicts?
Yeah.
Theological conflicts
or dilution.
Help me with that one.
Dilution.
Theological.
Dilution. Yeah. Not just controversy, or what does she?
Theological conflicts not divide, but what you're saying, the theology not be diluted?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a possibility of both conflict and dilution.
Okay.
People will be fracturing off the new beliefs because they don't like.
How about dilution of belief? I think that's what. Anybody else?
I fear less dollars for missions and more dollars for bureaucracy.
Okay.
It's been true in every single merger we've had from 1890 on.
Costly bureaucracy. Oops, I spelled it wrong.
Despite so many commitments.
Gosh. That says bureaucracy.
There's a possibility of greater lethargy in larger organization.
Okay. Bigness equals lethargy.
It may.
And
it won't change anything.
Okay. Nothing new. Right?
Fills my mind is that the lay people will yawn. But other one related to the book was that the centralization of power will be made in the clergy and the bureaucracy, and that the experimentation that I think the gospel causes and calls for won't be possible.
This is well put. how can you put that out there? Every bureaucracy hears this. Don't rock the boat is the word for that.
So you're really saying a concentration or
yeah.
a concentration of power in the...
The concentration of power will not be changed.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's related to my whole thing, which is that the experimentation would be possible.
Because you're suggesting it's already, that's where it is now.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Centralization of power continues.
With that, there is a fear of struggle for power because of our families.
I got a lot of bureaucracy. Yeah, you can get smaller.
You just do structure.
Just, my hands are trembling like it's the word bureaucracy. I don't know what that's caused by. Okay, well, let me just see if we can summarize this now. In terms of our fears, I, there's a lot of here about bureaucracy and bigness, that it not be just a big organization, that it not be a costly bureaucracy, that bigness not lead to lethargy, that the centralization of power in the church not continue with the bureaucracy or clergy, that the theological differences that have been uncovered or have been discussed not lead to division in the church, at the same time to not be a dilution of belief. On the hope side, and this, I think you could begin to see a pattern here, a relationship, that our bigness, the bigness of the church could lead to greater visibility in the American community, both church community and political community, that that bigness could enable the church to be stronger in mission, both local outreach and international mission, outreach to minorities, that it would avoid a duplication of effort, and that's again one of those dollar issues. And then some theological concerns or hopes. One centering on the pastoral office, Office of Ministry, which we'll be talking about, less emphasis on peripheral matters, the church be Christ-centered, gospel-centered, inclusive, more American. So I want to hear more about that from you. Okay, what I'd like to do with you is to look at the proposals of the new church that have come from the commission and play those off against the concerns that have been raised by, in particular, the LCA bishops and church council. Where we are right now is that the American Lutheran Church Council has, in effect, endorsed the recommendations of the CMLC. The LCA Church Council has raised questions, objections, as have the bishops. But my interest is not simply in our sitting around here and reflecting on what the commission has done or has done a good job or a bad job, but to really center in on the theological and ecclesiological or church issues that will affect all of us in our congregations. And if we finally end up saying, well, there's nothing new here, or what we're talking about really isn't going to change anything, then I suspect that we would all leave here saying, well, then there's no reason to have a new church. It's a big to-do about nothing. It seems to me, and that's why I'm I guess, doing this topic, is that there are some extremely important issues, theological concerns, that we can get into. I think they will make a change in the life of the church. I think what the commission is proposing to the churches, our three church bodies, is that we in fact do have a church that is new in many ways. And that proposal for newness is what is causing a lot of people some consternation and concern. I think the issues about the
what Carol raised, the issue of the pastoral ministry, the office of ministry, is one that certainly is, all the churches are talking about it. It's an issue for everybody. But I think what's happened in the last few years, both within Lutheran circles and ecumenical circles, has gone a long way in helping the churches understand the office of ministry. And I think it's just as important to those of you who are laity as it is to those of us who are clergy to understand that office and what it means and what it is. The doctrine of the church, and specifically the relationship between congregation and synod or district, for those of you in the ALC, that's your district is what the LCA calls a synod, and that's a geographic unit. And the national church, the relationship between national church, synod, district, and local congregation is a very important one. And that's one of the issues that have been raised by the bishops, the LCA bishops. I think the issue of inclusiveness. Can the church be intentionally inclusive? Is the one that has created a great deal of discussion and controversy. And we can talk about that. The other issues that have been raised, ecumenical commitments, I think we can talk about that. I think that's not a very big issue, frankly, in terms of where we are as Lutherans. I think there's more of an agreement, consensus on that than might seem to be. Pension plans, I have no thoughts on, so if anybody wants to talk about that, you're welcome to. That seems to be a very parochial clergy in-house concern, but I'm not going to waste my time on it. So, what I would like to do with you for the sessions that I'll be leading, and I'll be doing this both this week and next, is to look at and identify the issues that are of concern that you've identified here, to pick up the concerns of the LCA bishops, and together to discuss what we think about those things, and to learn. And I'll be using, I mentioned before, the CNLC report, summary commentary, also, which I'll be using, which is available in the bookstore, is a book by Carl Broughton entitled The Apostolic Imperative. Have you, any of you read this book?
No one. You also put that on the in the library. But if you want to read it in the library, don't take it away from the library.
Okay.
It is something I'm doing.
Okay, thank you. This book speaks to many of the theological issues that I just mentioned. It's got some extremely important things to say about mission. It starts with mission. It has some things to say about the church. It's got a lot to say about the ministry, the pastoral office. And you may want to look at this book, either to purchase it or to read parts of it in the library. Thank you. The other document, which I assume is in the library and I know is in the bookstore, is the Baptism of Eucharist Ministry document, which some of you I know are familiar with, others of you are not. This, too, is a resource in terms of our understanding, particularly when we get to the topic of ministry. And then we'll look at the issue of pastors and bishops and other ministers of the church. Okay? All right. And I have with me the statements that came out of the LCA bishops meeting. So I have that here. If any of you, I'll be making reference to them. If any of you would like to look at it yourself, I've got it here as a resource. Okay. Let me ask now for just some general questions and information. Does that sound like a good plan to you?
Tell me again, what are you going to do out of the apostolic plan?
The apostolic imperative, I'd like to start tomorrow, in fact, with a comment about what the mission of the church is, what we're about. And is this new church going to do a better job of it in terms of its own statement of purpose? it's got, it's extremely, I think, helpful, Elmer, with the its comments on ministry.
That was the one I was able to see.
Yeah, Carl Rotten is a professor of theology at Lutheran School in Chicago.
So this wasn't a report on that?
No, no, this is his own individually authored book. Carl Rotten, B-R-A-A-T-E-N. And again, it's in the bookstore and the library. I invite your questions at this point, or our comments, in terms of the new church, where we are.
Where will the control be? Is it going to be in a doctoral statement? Is it going to be in a, some sort of a magisterium? Or are you going to have,
you know, I'm just kind of curious, how does, can the church need discipline?
Not everything should just go, you know.
Where is the control? I really don't understand it at all.
Well,
do I stand in prison simply?
Well, I think what, I guess a facile answer would be that the control is in the fact that the churches would agree on a statement of faith, statement of purpose, and then that the congregations of the new church, and the congregation of the church which would share that statement of faith, statement of purpose, and that the constitution and bylaws lay out rather carefully the relationships between congregations, synods, and the national structure. That's, of course, a very appropriate question because that's the issue. We don't know until it's in place. I frankly think that one of the concerns behind the statement of the LCA bishops is their belief that they would be losing some of the control or authority that they have now. So it would be a diminution of that. I think that's part of it.
And it's true, we know that, and we're sort of hoping that they will in the land where they do it. But at the same time, somebody has to use it.
Mentioned earlier.
I thought I had, but
yeah. It was not about the Lutheran congregations.
That's what it's really about. I mean, that's Wayne?
I think it would be helpful to talk a little bit about this statement from the LCA bishops. I'm not sure everyone's really curious because what they were supposed to say from what we talked about. Again, that's one of those in-house things for those of us who are there.
Sure.
I'm dealing with things for a while. Even I would like to hear it.
Well, I touched on it, but let me just, I can very briefly summarize it. There is a basic disagreement in the traditions of the ALC and the LCA on the role of the congregation, whether the relationship of the congregation to the larger church. And the LCA bishops are suggesting a statement which would indicate that the congregation derives its authority from the whole church. What the CNLC is proposing is that we look at each unit of the church as being the church, but not the whole church, and that they be interdependent. And I'm talking now about congregation again, synod, and the national expression, the national church body. So that's one. There's an issue about the authority of the congregation and the role of the national church. That's the first concern of the LCA bishops, and I'll talk more about that in detail. Secondly, and this is a direct quote from the LCA bishops, they feel that the role of the ordained ministry is improperly diminished in the new church plans. They feel that the pastoral office should be identified as the only divinely instituted office in the church. What the CNLC is saying is that it is the office of word and sacrament that is divinely instituted. The pastoral office is divinely instituted, but the church may institute other offices, other forms of ministry. That sounds like it's so like you're cutting things really thinly, but there is an issue behind it, and I think we can unpack it, but it takes time. So I'm just kind of trying to identify it. It's the issue of ministry. Who does ministry? Where does ministry come from? For example, is the pastor simply a person who is selected by a congregation to do what the congregation wants to do in ministry? And that ordination is simply an acknowledgement of this conferring of responsibility? Or is the pastor a person, a man or a woman, who is called by God and ordained into the ministry of the whole church, and who carries out that ministry within a local congregation? Does ordination have some kind of sacramental content? In other words, is God doing something through ordination? Is it a gift that God gives to that person? Or is it only a recognition that a ministry has begun for this person? Okay? Thirdly, the quota system. And I'm now using the words that are used by the critics rather than inclusiveness. The CNLC is proposing that the church in its legislative bodies and in its leadership, in its officers, its staff people, and so forth, not the local congregation, but the synod and national levels, always have assemblies that are at least 60% laity, half female and half male, and 10% persons of color or whose primary language is other than English. That is not something that we have at this point in the church. There's no legislative statement about this. And the bishops, the LCA bishops, have said they agree with the 60% lay representation at all assemblies and in boards and committees. In other words, every synod or national committee, board, assembly, whatever, would always be 60% laity. They agree with that, but they are questioning the 50% male, 50% female, and the 10% people of color. The LCA Church Council did not go along with them on that. Okay, so that's the third issue. The fourth issue of the LCA bishops is ecumenical commitments. There is, frankly, and again, there's simply a reality, the LCA, Lutheran Church in America, has assumed the leadership of American Lutherans in relationship with the Roman Catholic Church. All the Lutherans in America have been involved in dialogues, but the LCA has taken leadership in the Lutheran relationship with the Roman Catholic Church. The American Lutheran Church is proposing and has led in relationships with the Reformed community. Specifically, at our conventions this summer, there'll be recommendations about pulpit and altar fellowship with the Presbyterian Church. And then finally is pension plans. The LCA bishops are not happy with the proposed pension plan. And just to tell you what that means, I think I got the figures right, is that currently the LCA pays 12%, the congregation pays 12% of the pastor's salary into a pension fund. The ALC pays 9%, and the AELC comes in bottom at 6%. The proposal is 9% with some variance taken for older ministers would get a higher percentage and younger ministers a lower percentage. And the LCA bishops want to keep it at 12%. It's a dollars and cents issue. Okay? Did that pretty well summarize it? Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
How about the continuous increase in formality in the church? Are we trying to get just like the high church and the Catholic church?
Are you talking about worship?
Yes.
Specifically, or something else?
Worship.
Lutheran Book of Worship?
One thing I saw on media, just I saw first service on Christmas Eve.
Oh, yes, I did.
On TV from New York, that was being broadcast from
St. Peter's Lutheran Church.
Which would make people feel, as some people have asked me or told me, well, if you go to Lutheran Church, you're just really like a Catholic country. It seems to me like, rather than keeping it a simple thing, which I thought the Christ intended, we're making it so formal, more formal all the time, with the idea that this is more drama all the time, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we could talk about that. That's an important issue.
I mean, could you put that in a way, like you might say, manipulation by experts, whether in liturgy or theology, and so on? Mm-hmm. I think it's a real thing.
Okay.
The manipulation of our people, who suppose liturgy is the people. And it's not. It's a committee with some crackpots that's got their particular interests. And no I and me hymns. They don't get rid of the Magnificat and the 23rd Psalm, but they would have. If they could have. They got rid of Paul Gerhardt. You know, I and me, got it up, got to be we. This guy was number four after his name from Harvard. And the kind of manipulation we've had from those guys is beyond belief. And our 225,000 loss in the American Lutheran Church can be signed pretty solidly to the Green Book.
Well, we should probably talk about that. Certainly, worship is that something that touches every one of us. And what we do together on Sunday morning as the people of God gathered around Word and Sacrament is at the very heart of what the church is, I feel. And if worship becomes a divisive issue, that's not healthy for the church. And yet, clearly, there has been a movement in American Lutheranism which culminated in 76 in the Green Book, which has taken Lutheran worship from one place and brought it to another.
Prayers for the dead, for example? Well, this is something nobody was asked about. So we pray for them after they're dead now. We don't have to worry about saving beforehand, but afterwards. I mean, these are the things that I want to talk about. Who does this to us? And where can they kick? We got a list of the hymns here at the village, the new hymns. I sing to thee with voice and heart. While my joy is the well was there, because the one hymn I insist on, new hymn book, that we could keep it. And they made a special list for Holden Village, I think. Because it wasn't a new hymn. I'm bothered by this because it's my prayer book. And they've taken my prayer book away from me twice. Every time they change it, I memorize these prayers, they're mine, and they shift them around. Oh, fine. But they change the images for adjectives, and we get this real jargon of the Green Hymn. Reducing the imagery to adjectives is not what I was told in all my classes that we were to do. Imagery over against adjectives. I mean, I'm just astounded. I came home, my son was typing on the typewriter furiously, and I had to pull him off. I said, they don't know you feel as strongly about this as I do. That would have to be a behold of oath, which is a real mess. But the experts, why can the experts do this to us? That's all I'm asking.
Let's take that. I'd like to respond to that. I have some opinions about worship, too, and would like to do that. Yes?
My objective report to my peer group is that young adults who are no longer college and are not yet in their group feel a little lost by that. I think the vulnerable groups, like the single adults, and the Lauren mentioned, older people who really cherish what has been, I think they're really subject to being
okay.
Especially for my students, I just don't see very many young single people. I see them when they're in college, and I see them when they're married and have kids, but in the same, I don't know whether or not. Holy Lord.
But are you implying that we have a red book they'd be back?
Oh, I guess I'm not quite for my time. What I'm saying is that I think there's some vulnerable groups that are going to be quite impacted by And the Green Book, I found that to me as a symbol of the nuclear power.
Let me respond by saying that the Green Book was probably instrumental in getting, was one of the instruments in getting the churches as close together as we have been. When a majority, as which is now the case, I don't know what the exact number is, but when the majority of American Lutheran congregations are using the same worship book, that in itself was an instrument in bringing us closer together. We've now had it for 10 years. It's kind of surprising for me to think about that, but it's been 10 years now.
The 27% English hymn to be that they haven't sung in English church either, we can't sing. I mean, that's ridiculous to think about it, but I agree with it. So it's a little jarring.
Anybody else?
I think there's a tremendous danger in sending percentage of voting in the I worked for the federal government.
The minority
issue came up, and they were giving quotas for minorities. Okay, they had to hire so many, and they got extra brownie points for hiring them. So-called minorities. They were hired without, in many instances, without making allowances for the fact that they had not had the opportunity to post the news, so they were hired at without taking the kind of examinations most people had taken to get the job. And many of them, in order to fill their quota, were put on, given every opportunity. But many of them were not inclined to work for it. And there are problems today, and they are trying to disseminate that situation, and have, in fact, decided there will no longer be that. I understand now. It's been in effect now for about nearly 20 years ago. At the same time, it would still be positive percentages that they're working for rather than the right person for the job.
Instead of quality, it's possible in some locations they would have more than 10% they prefer who were black or.
Yeah.
Or there's so few blacks in the church. I come from a black congregation. And I'll give my opinions about both the elderly and all the others. They come from the black people. I'll be glad to share that. But I think that is such a minor point. There's so few compared to the issue here is that the women will be tired. Because the women are represented in that quota. And then we take the quotas away. We don't have them for blacks, so we better not have them for women. And then the women will be lost to the church.
Well, I think they better just make it clear that people should not be chosen by sex or by.
Well, let me, if I can, because our time is up, let me tell you this, what I'd like for us to do is I'm going to take these concerns, hopes and fears that you've shared, and make sure that in the outline that we do of our discussion that we cover those. And I'm going to ask you to hold me to those, make sure they are. What I'd like to do, I'll give you the plan for the week, is I'd like for us to look tomorrow at the purposes of the new church. And that means the mission. What's the mission of the church? What are we about? Why are we church? Why are you church? I'd like to look at the issue of inclusiveness on Wednesday. Thursday would be the bishop's concerns that we've talked about, specifically the issue about the congregation. And that's speaking to some of your concerns about the congregation. How will the new church affect the life of your congregation? Will it at all? Positively or negatively? And then Friday, to look at the ministry, the question of ministry, specifically the apostolic foundation of ministry. In other words, where did ministry come from? What is the ministry? And those are all important aspects of the content of the church.